Welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. Where was Mo, you may be thinking? Well, I was right here, but I was daydreaming. I must admit, so it must fit, or something. I don't know what. Creaky made his little presence known before I said anything. Sorry about that. I was sitting here pondering what we're going to talk about today, because it is a ponderous sort of thing, and a wondrous sort of thing, and an amazing sort of thing, and welcome! Today is March the 6th of the year 2024. Yeah, welcome to 2024. As if that hasn't already amazed you, it sure amazes me. And, it's another Wednesday. It's the first Wednesday in March of the year 2024. Wowie kazowie. Already in the third month of the year, and it just seemed like it had just started. So how you been? How you doing? What's going on? The new moon is coming up on the 10th. That's this coming Sunday. And guess what else is coming this Sunday? Yippee-yay-yay-ki-yay. Yippee-yo, yippee-yippee-skippy. Daylight savings time begins this coming Sunday on the new moon. I'm so excited. I'm so very excited. Can't you hear it in my voice? Me. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the daylight savings time. I don't know. It's just like, you know, there are people who say they'd like to have it all year long. I remember when they did that. I was a kid, and we were going to school pitch dark, you know. Coming home pitch dark. It was just dark. It seemed like we were at school all day long, and it was dark. And then we get up and it was dark. And we come home and it was dark. All day long it was dark. You know, there was never any sunshine. It was just dark all the time. It was always dark. It was always dark. Even in the summertime, it was... Actually, in the summertime, there was never any darkness at all. Which was kind of cool, because we would play until 2 or 3 in the morning and the sun would still be shining brightly. Nope, none of that is true. But anyway, that's just the way it seemed. So, how y'all doing? Hope you're doing well. It's going to be quite an interesting few months here, in case you hadn't noticed already. Last night was Super Tuesday! Crickets chirping? I need to get that. I need to get some crickets chirping. Yeah. Because that's kind of how it goes. Crickets chirping. Nope, Super Tuesday. And of course, we're all on the rush to see if democracy will survive. And I'm not going to get into politics here until later. And then I'm going to get into it maybe, maybe not. But, you know, this is a very fascinating time in the history of the world. And in the history of the United States of America. Very interesting time. Indeed. Indeed. And you can say I was there. Yep, I was there. I remember in 20 of 24. Or 24 of 20. Whatever. However we're going to say it. And I remember. Yep, it was the year of democracy. Not the last year, but just it was a year of democracy. Or you could say, yep, it was the last year of democracy. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I do know what's going on. I just don't like to admit it. But there are a lot of things going on, and people are like, just, I don't want to talk about it. So I won't talk about it. So how are you? I hope you're doing well. Next month, on the 8th of the month, that's 2 days away in a month. Exactly, because there are only 30 days. Oh, there's 31 days in March. So no, a month and a day. Will be the solar eclipse. Last one being in 2017. I put a thing on my Facebook page that said, solar eclipse. Are you going to watch it? I'm not going to watch it. I kind of in those words, not really in those words. I hadn't put anything on my Facebook page, my, what they call a business page. it's not really much of a business page because I don't really, you know, it's like a public page. That's my public page. I am a celebrity. I'll try and say that with a straight face. Nothing celeb about me. But on that page, public page, whatever that means. And even if I lived in the swath of where it's going to be, my kid brothers live in Austin, Texas. I think my sister might go watch with them. And I am advising them, don't do it. Just, there have been so many spiritual imperatives not to be subjected to a solar eclipse. Any eclipse, actually, because it is not considered to be a positive thing. And I used to ballyhoo and negative that all the time. I'd say, oh, that's just superstition. No need to be that way. Don't be that way. You shouldn't be that way. But there have been some very intelligent cultures, and modern cultures indeed, who have echoed that, including indigenous peoples of this country still today, who during a solar eclipse will go inside and just do basically nothing. They don't work. They just sit. And maybe they'll talk. They will talk amongst each other, but they won't work. They won't watch the television. They just sit and they just hunker. And the main thing is not to allow yourself to receive any rays of the sun because of what's happening and the spiritual aspect and imperative therein. This is common in some sects of Buddhism. This is Hinduism. Ancient cultures, well, I mean, when we stop and think about what some of the ancient observatories were for example, why is it so important in Stonehenge to know when the eclipses are coming? Why? Why do you think? Because you don't want to get caught unawares when an eclipse is coming, because it might just be bringing something that you absolutely do not want to be a part of. Right? Well, yeah. That might just be the case. That might just be the case. So I think that there is great wisdom in that. I think that there is a great sense of intelligence in that. At least that is how it seems to me. So there that is, and there that is, and that's there. So I'm just going to say I think that's an important... That's up to you, though. I'm not trying to tell you to do that. I just think that that's something I'm going to do. I'm not going to watch it. Well, first of all, I'm nowhere where I can see it. It's going to be about, I think, 90% here or something like that. Or maybe not even that much. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. But that's the key, you see. I'm just not going to really worry about it. So therein that is that, and therein there is that as well. And all together now, how do you do? And what do you do? And when do you do it? And so on and so forth. But think about that. Look into it. Read about the cultures that today still do not want to be subjected to a solar eclipse, because there is something there, I think, that is quite fascinating. At least it sure is to me. Sure is to me. Huh. Yeah. At least to me. So, there you go, and here we are, and there that is. I just am not a big fan of... I used to watch anything like that in the sky. I've looked at comets. I think comets are interesting. I like them. There was one when I was young, maybe in junior high or high school, and I would go out every night and look at it. It had kind of a greenish tinge. Was it Kohoutek? Might have been. I don't remember now. And I just marveled at it as it got bigger and bigger because it got closer to the sun. You know. Fascinating. Fascinating. The I Ching mentions seeing the pole star in the middle of the day And of course, people used to wonder, what the heck does that mean? Well, of course, it refers to an eclipse of the sun, because when the sun is eclipsed, you can see the sun in the or the pole star in the middle of the day, can't you? Well, sure you can. Yep. So it's fascinating stuff, but it's up to you. You know, the whole thing is that what happens is that you've got the nodes that get in the place and the moon and blah, blah, blah. But the nodes are known as the caput and cauda draconis, or the head and tail of the dragon. Rahu and Ketu, which are the head and tail of a demon. And there's a great tale about that in the Vedic myths, stories. Shouldn't call them myths because it's a religion, right? And the stories are really good, because what it says is that when all the... And I'm paraphrasing, right? And pardon me for that. But there's a... as the gods were getting together to drink Amrita or Soma to become immortal, they had a gathering, and they got into a contest to see who was the best singer and who was the best javelin thrower and who was the best discus thrower and that sort of thing. And so what it was, they got into a battle of ego, and I love that. And as they did this, they really weren't paying much attention to what was happening around them. And thus, they became negligent of the fact that this huge snarling demon came in. But just before he came in, dressed up like a beautiful youth, and turned himself into that, and drank of this soma, and became immortal. And then at that point, Vishnu said, "Oh no, this is not good. That's not a beautiful youth. That is a demon." And he threw his Sudarshan, which is a disc, and the disc of light, and cut it in half. But forever there was this snarling head of the demon and the tail of the demon thrashing. And of course, the Sudarshan was the zodiac, right? And so forever they're in the sky, the snarling head and the thrashing tail, and that's the north and south nodes of the moon. And every now and then they get in the right position and we have eclipses. So we're talking about a head and tail thrashing and snarling, swallowing the sun and the moon. So that's, I mean, I have a friend who's a Hindu, and he says every time there's an eclipse, he says, "You're crazy. You're crazy. You should avoid those things." And after what happened in 2017, there's a lag period for the effects to happen. It's not like it happens right away. Usually about 3 years or 4 years. Did anything happen in 2019, 2020 that you might think, "Oh, this country went through some stuff"? Now, in fact, the whole world went through stuff, but how about this country? Did anything historically? Well, we'll think about that, you know. So I don't know. I don't know. Superstition, is it? I don't know. There's some very intelligent people I know who... So I'm just telling... I've told my brothers, yeah, well, be careful. Just be careful. I mean, you've got to... You know, I'm certainly not going to say, "Hey, hold your phones up and show me the corona," you know, that sort of thing. But, and if I was down there, I'm old enough, I might say, "What the heck? I've got to see a total eclipse of the sun once in my life, because it's going to be a while." So, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And what are you going to do? What is that noise? Nothing. Nonsense. It's nonsense. Don't pay attention to the man in the red flannel suit. So what am I going to talk about today? Mainly the I Ching. Now, I have been obsessing about the I Ching most of my life. And I've told the story about how I was introduced to the I Ching many times. I won't put that on the fire right now, because it crackles and it snaps and it pops. I think I have been told that story maybe last week. But I've been working on a lot of things. And I made these very cool beads that I'm wearing, and I just took them off, and they crackle a little bit. They're very nice. They're small. And I've been wearing them to attune them to myself. Do I believe in such things? You darn tootin' I do. All you have to do to attune a set of beads to yourself is just run them through your fingers for a few days. You know, I have a mala that I have. It's actually called a tesbih, but it has 37 beads, and I like it very much. And I run it often, sometimes for hours. And I do that while I watch TV. I do that while I read. I do that while I do my crossword puzzle in the morning. I do that a lot. I have still a mala that I used. It's 108 beads. They're Bodhi seeds. And I've had it for over 30 years. And I used to run it when I did readings. And I would, every time I ran it in my mind, it would be Om Mani Padme Om, Om Mani Padme Om, Om Mani Padme Om, Om Mani Padme Om, not out loud, but just as an echo in the back of my mind. And so that is very much attuned to me. And you would be surprised at how powerful these things can become as far as you go. They're just very much in tune with you. So these I Ching beads, what's an I Ching bead? Let me explain that. Some people call them dragon beads. This one is of a little more peculiar design, and I'll explain that. You know there are different ways to approach the I Ching. And for those of you who know what the I Ching is, it is a form of divination, but more importantly, it is a philosophy. It is considered by some to be one of the oldest books on the planet, at being at about 5,000 years old, and that is not hyperbole. It is that old. And it is Chinese. Wonderful thing. Fuxi was the emperor who supposedly came up with it. I say supposedly because that's, you know, he was an emperor Fuxi, and he saw a tortoise coming out of a river, and he saw markings upon its back, the Yellow River, and he saw these markings upon the shell of the tortoise, and he said, oh my goodness, these markings are ways to divine the future. And so it's a long story, but this book eventually came to be known as the I Ching or Yi King, this Yi King or whatever. I'm not Chinese. I had a Chinese teacher who taught Chinese history, and I took every class she taught, and wanted to take more, but she didn't teach anymore. She was brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and she was from Rocky Ford, Colorado, and was not Asian. She was Occidental, but she went to China and took classes and spoke Chinese, spoke Cantonese and Mandarin and something else, another dialect, and was just wonderful. Such a wonderful person. Truly, truly remarkable. Very nice, too. And I didn't know she had moved back to Colorado. Found out too late. She died, unfortunately, before I got a chance to. I would have loved to have known she was here. I would have driven to where she was teaching and just said, thank you. Thank you for what you did for me, which was instill in me such an amazing love of history. And there were some other teachers too, but boy, did she make it live, you know. And she had a good sense of humor. With me, you had to have a good sense of humor in college, that's for sure. But she was remarkable. Her name was Beatrice Spade, B. Spade. And she was just as bright as they come and as wonderful as they come. I sing her praises and will forever. But nice person. And she taught a class in the Victorian underworld and crime. It was just fantastic. Teachers like that are rare. And I met her in Louisiana, at Louisiana State University. And we got along very well because we were both from the same neck of the woods, you know. And And she understood my particular type of weirdness. Although she was an actual scholar, you know. It was some sort of ersatz thing. But anyway, so I wasn't confident enough with my involvement with the I Ching to really talk to her about it, but it's known as the classic of changes. I wish I had been, because I really think that could have been, I would have loved to have taken a class with her on that. I wonder if she even consulted, but that would have been fascinating. But here's a lesson, friends. Don't miss chances like that because you're a little nervous or a little shy. Grasp them. If you meet someone who is skilled in something and obviously brilliant on a, just ask, would you mind? I did that with my classics teacher, my classical history teacher. I said, would you do a tutorial with me on ancient Egypt? And he said, sure. And I was thrilled. And he read four books every book I read. He would make me read three books a week, and he would read, so he read 12 books a week. And he didn't own a television, you know, and I didn't watch much TV in college. The only shows I watched were Saturday Night Live and Monty Python, actually, and that was on Saturday night, and that was it. I don't think I had time for much of anything else, and I had hundreds of pages of reading. Wow, that was quite something, suddenly finding out that I had some talent at all. It was really something, but and I enjoyed it, and it was fun to turn the mind on after all those years. But it was good. So it's an amazing thing, you know, the I Ching, an amazing thing. But it is a book of philosophy. But more than that, it is very helpful because it is a form of divination. And my favorite book on the I Ching is Richard Wilhelm's book, which is translated into English because he was German, by Carrie F. Baines. And that's what I use. Now, I have lots of books. I have The Tao of I Ching by Zhou Zhonghua. And if you can find that book, good luck trying to find it. It's very rare, and I've got one, and it's a good book. But it's really good more on kind of the basics of the I Ching, on how to read it and so on. It's a pretty faithful translation. The I Ching itself is not a thick book. It's 64 hexagrams, which means six lines. And but it's also written in as a poem, the rhyme, but only in Chinese. And I think just kind of generally, when I was in California, in Chinatown, in San Francisco in 1993, we wandered into a shop and they had these I Ching books that were written on very cheap newsprint, really cheap, but they were cool. And I almost bought one, and then I realized that we were in a funeral shop and they were meant to be burned. And I thought, nah, I'm not going to buy one of these. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but I couldn't, for some reason, you know. But they had illustrations, but the printing was terrible, as you can imagine, you know. But they had all these, so. But anyway, I wax ridiculously. But the thing about the I Ching is that it's a remarkable tool. It's like I said, 5,000 years old. And the Confucians got a hold of it. Confucius was really into it. And it helped. And it is the basis, in many ways, of much of Chinese culture, including feng shui. Feng shui, which, of course, is the proper energetic placement of things in order to match nature, in order to live in harmony with nature and with everything. It's a very powerful way of thinking. And I don't always live that way. Kind of you find that if you study this stuff long enough, you kind of naturally do it. It's just one of those things you do. Kind of. Not always, but you try. And so I've been fascinated with it all my life, but lately I've been on kind of a revisitation of it. I started with the Luo Pan. The Luo Pan is the feng shui compass that the geomancers use, geomancer being the study of earth energy. It's great stuff. Many of you may have a Luo Pan if you tried doing feng shui. If you're in the compass school, it's a compass. And it's complicated when you get into that part of it. I have a small Luo Pan that is, it's, you know, I'd like a more heady one. You know, it can be horrifically expensive. And they don't have to be, but yeah, there's some pretty good ones out there. So using the I Ching, there are many different ways to consult it. And so here I've been working on these beads. Now, these beads, I made my first set, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 years ago. And the beads are very simple. They're not simple. I shouldn't say that. But there is a thing called a De Bruijn sequence. And that's not spelled the way it sounds. I won't bother you with that. But the De Bruijn sequence, basically, it's a mathematical principle that says if you have numbers, let's say you've got two numbers, 0 and 1, binary system, that you can have basically a 0 and a 1, and a 1 and a 0, a 0, 0, and a 1, 1. And those are all the combinations that you can have, right? And you could put those all together in line and da-da. Well, with the I Ching, you can have 64 different numbers of 0, 1, right? And have all the different hexagrams. I'm getting confusing here. Suffice to say that with these so-called dragon beads, and I've got one here that I'm first, one of the first ones I made a long time ago, made out of white beads that are made out of stone, kind of a marble, white marble, and black lava. There are 32 of each, so there are 64. Now, the amazing thing about this is that these 64 beads, what I can do is I can create all the 64 hexagrams with these beads, these 64 beads. Now, that's amazing to me. All 64 hexagrams can be made with these 64 beads. And I used to wear these, but they're not stretch, and they're hard to get on my wrist, and they're too small to get over my wrist easily, and I'm afraid they'll break, but I put them on a real strong string, and I kind of quit using them. So I put some nice wooden beads on elastic, and they're smaller, 6 millimeter. And I thought, well, but the thing is how to do the moving lines, and for those of you who do the I Ching, blah, blah, blah. And what it is, it's a form of advice or divination, right? So I still have these, and there are many different ways to do this. Like, there's over 24 million different ways to do it, from what I've read, 27 million, something like that. I can't remember now. It's complicated. But I've been obsessing over this, and I finally designed this set of beads that I really like, which allows you to anytime you want, to ask a question of the I Ching, not have to use yarrow stalks, which was the original method of consulting the I Ching, which is time-consuming. And there are about 5 different ways of using the yarrow stalks. The conventional way mentioned in the Wilhelm book, Richard Wilhelm, takes about 20 minutes to do it right. And it's kind of repetitive, and it's kind of ritualistic, and it's fun to do. But it is kind of, okay, you know, this is obviously a ritual thing. And then there is the coin method, the 3-coin method. And there are odds involved in these. And the odds are kind of different, you know. I'm not going to get into the odds, although I can just quickly mention that it's like 1 in 16 of getting a changing yen. Those of you who know what I'm talking about, I'll just mention this. 3 out of 16 of getting a changing yang. 5 out of 16 of getting a yang. 7 out of 16 getting a yen, blah, blah, blah. With the coins, it's 1 out of 8 out of getting either a changing yin or yang, and 3 out of 8 of getting a yang or a yin. So it's different with the yins and yangs, with the coins and the arrow stocks. I know, horrible. This is just horribly dry and mundane. But the point is, the I Ching is not. It's fascinating. So I've been obsessing about this, working with this. Out of the blue, on my Facebook page, someone writes me this question about the I Ching. Man, I haven't gotten a question about the I Ching in ages. And now I've actually got I have a YouTube channel. I have no idea how to find it. I think you just go to YouTube, put in my name, Mo Abdelbaki, and it'll take you to it. But I've got two things on how to consult the I Ching, one with the coins. And I said that the head side was the tail side on the Chinese coins. And there is no head or tails on Chinese coins. There just isn't. I chose one because that's how I like to think of it. And it made sense to me. And people, boy, this one person just jumped right all over me. I said, fine. I'm sorry. I made a mistake. And I owned up to it. But the truth of the matter is, there is no head. There is no tail because they don't have George Washington on one side and a bird on the other, right? There just isn't. There's no obverse and no there's an obverse, maybe in a reverse, I don't know. But so I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying I'm not wrong. You know, that's just how that goes. But you can see on there, and it's been seen a lot of times, and people seem to really like it. If you want to learn how to cast the I Ching coins, that will help you, and you can learn that. It's right there. There's another method, which I enjoyed quite a bit, which is the six coin method, and that is also taught in another video there. But the point is, consulting the I Ching is a breeze, man. It really is not hard. It's a lot simpler than what I've been telling you today. And it works. It works every single time. It is absolutely, I think, flawless. And it's friendly. It's gentle. I call it my Uncle Yi, because it's like Tarot can really nail you. You know, you can ask a question of Tarot, and it'll just absolutely, you know, nail your feet to the floor, like an old Three Stooges short. You know, it'll just pound nails through your shoes. It's not gentle. Tarot never promises to be gentle. It never supposes it's going to be gentle. Astrology is fact. It's fact versus fiction. Sometimes there isn't really much leeway with astrology, but Uncle Yi will say, Mo, sit down, think about this, you know? So I had a question, which was really a nice question, because it's a hard thing. When you're doing, especially with the coins, you can have, when you're casting these lines, and what you do is you cast and you get lines. And the lines are either going to be stable, which means it's just like a solid line or a broken line. Solid line is known as yang, and a broken line is known as yin. And if it's solid and it's stable, yin or yang, then nothing happens. It's just you form this hexagram. You find the hexagram in the book. You read what it says, and then you move on. But the point is that usually there is a moving line, and then the moving line changes, and it turns into another hexagram. So then you have an outcome, and you go to the outcome, and then you say, okay, this is what is going to happen. Hence the book of changes. So he said, I had like 4 moving lines. What do you do? Do you have to go to all those different hexagrams? You say, yeah, that's kind of the fun thing. And I realize a little bit later on, it's kind of like when you ask the I Ching something, you're going on a journey. You're saying, okay, I'm going on a journey here. And it's like getting on a train. And not every line is going to move, right? Maybe you'll have one. But not every line is going to move. So you get on the train, and if there's, let's say you have 4 moving lines. I've only had 2 or 3 readings in my life that have had three or four moving lines. One was not long before I broke up with my ex-wife. And I thought, oh my God, this is really crazy. Is it going to be this complicated? Boy, howdy, was it complicated. And boy, howdy, was it complicated. But it's like you get on the train and you stop at a station and you think, okay, I'm going to get off here for a second and just stretch my legs. And you get off and you see a sign and you read the sign. And the sign says, beware of the, you know, snakes. And so you say, oh, okay, I'll keep that in mind. You get back on the train and you go past the next station and then you stop at another station. And you say, okay, I'm going to get off and see what it says. And it says, don't drink the water here. All right, so beware of the water. And you get back on, and that's what it's like when you have several moving lines. You don't take into account everything that it says there or anything else. You just take the little tidbit that you get with the moving line, and then eventually you end up at your destination, which is the final hexagram, and then you learn something. Then you get something. That's what the I Ching is about. And it really sometimes challenges you to think it through. And I've had 3 days where I've had to mull over whatever it was the I Ching was saying. 3 days. Now that's a commitment. That's a commitment that you put forth in your life. And you say, okay, I'm going to think about this. And when it hits you, wowie, it is so powerful. It is an amazing epiphany. You just say, that's it. I got it. And it prepares you for what is coming. It prepares you for the moment. And when it comes, you know exactly how to act. You know exactly what to do. There is a term in the I Ching, the superior person. The superior person. They say the superior man because it is obviously sexist. But we get to be, you know, superior to that and say, okay, I'm not sexist. And I'm not sexist, you know. I think that those ways of thinking are ridiculous. And thank goodness outmoded. So I get to say, okay, the superior person does this. And you get to a point where you watch life, watch politics, and you will see people who are filled with conscience and ethical standards, and you will see people who are not. If you want to know someone who I think is absolutely bound by their conscience, their ethical standards, and a duty, a sense of duty and patriotism, to me, it's Jamie Raskin, a representative from, maybe he's a senator, I should know that, from Maryland. This is a man who lost his son to suicide and has had cancer, and yet is still hanging in there and working hard. He's a Democrat, and he's working very hard to make things hopefully better, you know. And obviously, he is partisan, but more than that, he has a very strong sense of what is right and what is wrong. Now, there are a lot of people who seem to be a little lost at sea. And I've known people like that in my life, you know. I've been friendly with people like that in my life who just didn't seem to be able to, you know, figure out what was right and what was wrong. Or worse yet, people who knew what was right and wrong but refused to take part in it. And the I Ching makes it very clear what is right and what is wrong. And it's not based upon cultural mores. It's based upon nature, what is right and what is wrong. For example, the fourth hexagram, which is called Youthful Folly. It's about education. You know, it is the duty of everyone who has the potential to teach and to help others to do so. But when you're young, you can be a dope, you know. Trust me, I was a dopey person. God, was I a loud mouth. I still am a big mouth. I still talk way too much. And not just here. I mean, I meet people and I'm yak. I'm friendly and kind of always been that way. And yet I'm an introvert, which you may find hard to believe, but it's true. And I'm extremely shy in certain situations. It's why people don't invite me to parties, you know, because they think, oh, let's invite Mo. We have to invite Mo. And Mo goes to the party and Mo ends up sitting in a corner somewhere watching other people, because I love to watch people interact with each other and with the world in general. And, you know, there's this video of me being interviewed on YouTube, and I'm sitting there looking like I'm a hostage the whole time. I'm sitting on a couch and I'm being interviewed, and I swear I look like I'm expecting any moment to be arrested, because I look just not miserable. And I know the lady and she's very sweet. I like her, but it's just, it's just one of those things. It's not that I was uncomfortable, because I just, you know, it was one of those things where I knew there might be a curveball coming here or there, and I look like, you know, okay, I know what you're doing here, and I look like that. It's strange. That's who I am. I don't suppose I'm the most trusting person in the world, but then again, I haven't necessarily lived a life where I should be trusting all the time. I'll say that. Maybe you're the same way. The I Ching you can trust, because the questions are, and what I like about the Wilhelm book is that he was a Christian missionary, but he hooked up with a Taoist monk. And the Taoist monk told him stuff, you know, said, oh, well, this is what this means, and this is what that means. And he doesn't, Wilhelm doesn't seem to have the white man's burden. A guy named James Legge, who wrote a book in 1895 or so, does have that white man's burden, you know, as they call it. It's not my term. But it is very appropriate. It's an apt term. So now with these beads, all you have to do is you set them up one way or the other, and you just use them that way from then on. There is a beginning and an end, and I use them that way. And then you just run them through your fingers, and the whole point is not to be able to know where the beginning is. So they feel the same, and I'm running them through. And then you just stop at a bead. And then from there, you can look, and there are six beads ahead of you, and those six beads are the beads that you then, okay, here's, and I'm looking at six beads, and the six beads I'm looking at are, and they're color-coded, right? So the dark beads are yin, and the bright beads, or the white beads, so black and white, although this one I did differently. I'm not going to explain it because it would take too much time. But so I'm looking at the 12th hexagram, which is called stagnation. And it's like, wow, that's a tough one, right? And there's a way to get a moving line. So I'm going to do that now. So the first line I'm going to take a look at. Doesn't move. And I'm not going to explain this process. Nope, doesn't move. And this, nope, doesn't move. And this, nope, doesn't move. That's four. So line five, that one. Yes, five moves. And six, does that move? Six moves. So five and six move. So just very quickly, you know, so you think, okay, so five and six moves, so that changes that to pushing, to enthusiasm. No, five and six move. So five and six move. So that's Dui. No, it isn't. So that's Gen on top. And aha. So that's splitting apart. Ooh, wee. So that's the 23rd hexagram splitting apart. So we have stagnation leading to splitting apart. Now, I didn't ask a question, but so what we got here is a very interesting, and you have to remember that on any given day, any hexagram can change into any other hexagram. So we had this concept of stagnation turning into splitting apart. And you see, you don't always have to look for the meaning of the moving lines, but if you don't, you don't have to. So you don't have to carry the books around. And sometimes you'll know the meaning of the lines, right? But if you, to do this method, you have to kind of have an idea of what the hexagrams are and kind of what they mean, right? So I kind of do, because I've been doing this for a long time. And so you say, okay, well, a period of stagnation will lead to a period of something splitting apart. And you say, well, that's actually probably a relatively good thing, because stagnation is not necessarily good, but splitting apart also can be a problem. But you know that the 24th hexagram is called a time of return. So it splits apart, but then splitting apart doesn't stay like that forever. Something has to happen, and it comes back. So, and I know what's been on my mind lately, so we'll see how things go. But I'm just saying, this is how you use this. So you get a very quick, you know, and then you write it down if you want, and you say, okay, so that was, 5 and 6 move. I changed 4 and 5. See, this is why you write stuff down. So actually, that is enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is 16. So, oh, that changes everything. So out of stagnation comes enthusiasm. Well, I like that better, don't you? Out of enthusiasm, it's the 16th hexagram. Stagnation comes enthusiasm. Well, that's good. That's better. Oh, that feels much better. So then you can, you know, you write that down. You go 12 to 16, you know. And then that's that. And then you later on, because I didn't ask a question. If I'd asked a question, it would have been, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I would go back and I would look at the moving lines and I would think about that. Now, I don't ever rush to judgment on an answer. But on something like that, I'm not worried about the moving lines necessarily, I would just say, okay, out of stagnation comes enthusiasm. And that makes sense to me, because you get bored. Bored. And then something hits you, say, okay, let's do this, you see? So yeah, that's the I Ching. But that's what I think it was remarkable that I was asked this question. And I had this image of getting on a train and stopping at a station. If you don't use the I Ching, let me tell you, you're missing something wonderful. It's an enrichment to your life. It's been an enrichment to my life. And when you realize how everything in culture, in much of culture, is based upon it, I'll never forget the first time I read the Bible. I had never read the Bible, and I was 18, and my family and I had gone to the Morro Bay Oyster Festival, only to find out that there were no oysters. So we spent the weekend at a Motel 6, and as I recall, it was like $6. It was a long time ago. And in the I hadn't brought a book, because I expected to be eating oysters and shucking oysters all weekend. So we hung out on the beach, and I picked up sea glass and jade. There was a lot of jade on the beach. And, man, I had that for almost forever. And just a few years ago, lost it in a move. But beautiful little rocks and stuff that I picked up on the beach in Morro Bay, California. Morro Rock, which was very cool. And, God, that was quite a trip. That was quite a time. That was over 50 years ago. And there in the hotel room was a Bible, a Gideon's Bible. And motel room, and I started to read it, and I was absolutely fascinated. And so I said, I've got to keep reading this. And my dad said, I think they probably want you to read it. That's why it's here. It was left by the Gideons. And so I felt real guilty, but I said, I'm taking the book. So I took the book. And I later on called the Gideons and said, I'm sorry, I took this book, and I found their phone number. And they said, no, we're glad you have it. And said, "We believe me, they have boxes of them in the motel, and they replaced it. And I said, oh, cool. They said, was it in good shape? I said, well, it has some water damage. They said, we'll send you a new one. I said, no, I like it just the way it is. Because it reminds me of that weekend completely. I didn't do the water damage. It was water damage. And it's on my bookshelf right now. They said, keep it in good health. We're glad you have it. And what I couldn't believe about that Bible, and like I said, I'm looking at it right now. It's on my bookshelf next to other books that are holy books, other religions. It was how it's the cornerstone of our culture. I mean, you read that book and you think, holy mackerel, it is absolutely vital that people read this book so they understand how important it is to the culture of Western civilization. And it blew my mind. I mean, I couldn't believe it. And there are people who've never read it, people who don't know anything about it and don't understand it. And I think, oh, okay, well, I'm glad I at least read the book. I've read it a few times because it's just, it's like, wow. Wow, it's a wow book for me, only because it just astounds me for reasons I'm not going to get into today. Suffice to say, I'm not going to say anymore, but holy books always blow my mind. You know, it's like, okay, you know, and I've read the Quran and I've read the Vedas and Upanishads, not all of them, but, you know, lots. But, pardon me, Buddhist scriptures, and I love that stuff because you realize that so much of the world, let's move on, yeah, and the I Ching is right in there with it, you know, yeah. You could read the Tao Te Ching, you know, which is the classic of the Tao, written by Lao Tzu. And there's so much to read, so much to know, and so little time to really get it under your belt and or skin. But the I Ching is phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. I can guarantee you that once you get your first successful divination under your skin, and it'll test you a little bit. Are you serious about this? Are you really gonna do this? Are you gonna ask, and are you gonna get something? And you know, the first time you ask a serious question, yes or no questions are kind of a waste of its time. You can do it, but it's not really worth it, I don't think. But the first time you get a good answer and it just blows your mind, you're gonna be hooked. And don't ask 10 questions in a row. Don't ask you can ask every day, but don't overdo it because it's you know, you're supposed to think for yourself too. But it's pretty remarkable. So that's what I wanted to talk about today. There'll be a lot of I Ching being utilized by a lot of people over the next few months. There's a lot of panic going around. I bet you can feel it if you just put your ear to the ground, metaphorically speaking. You can feel it. I can feel it. I know you can too. And don't give in to it. Don't give in to the panic. It's not worth it yet. Okay? And there's no need to panic. There's no need. Nothing to worry about. Everything will be fine. Everything will be fine. It all works out in the end. And it will work out. I made some predictions at the beginning of the year. I stand by them. Did I say I stand Biden? I don't think so. Don't put words in my mouth. All right, my friends. All right. Okay. Good enough for this week. Until next week, here I am just saying... I love you all, and until next week, wishing you all peace and love. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4. Thank you.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I am Mo Abdelbaki, and today is Wednesday, the 12th of July. July, yeah. 2023. Oh, the year is just speeding by, isn't it? Isn't it? Already the seventh month of the 23rd year of the 21st century. And to think just a moment ago I was in Mrs. Parsons' fifth grade class at Laurel Elementary in Fort Collins, Colorado. Okay, go ahead, those of you listening who want to steal my identity. I won't get you that far. And now that's been a challenge. And they'll go, yes, yes, I can do everything. Well, go ahead. I mean, really, it's the world today. Oh, the world today. Isn't it a sorry place? It's not that bad. It's weird. A lot of strange goings on. There are good people left in the world. There are good people left in the world, which was proven to me recently. Thank you again. You know who I'm talking to. So, what should we talk about today? How's the weather been? How are you feeling? How has your weather been? Wow. To those of you in Vermont, and I know that there are a couple of listeners in Vermont, Montpelier, and Vermont is a destination place. It's a destination state where people go to, like Colorado. People come to Colorado to see the mountains and to, you know, buy rock candy, because we have lots of mountains and lots of rocks, and they make candy that looks like rocks. And it's good. We have saltwater taffy in Estes Park, and of course, I'm not sure what that has to do with the mountains, but it's pretty good stuff. And in Montpelier, Vermont, they have flooding, and that's Vermont is the same sort of thing. A lot of tourism. And this is the most popular time of year to be there. And so, what are they going to do? Because the flooding has been horrible. Montpelier is underwater right now. And of course, in many parts of the country, it is so incredibly hot that it's just crazy hot. And that's the only way to put it. 120 degrees. They're talking about 125 degrees in some places. We have just had several of the hottest days ever recorded on planet Earth. Now, that doesn't mean they're the hottest days ever on planet Earth, but ever recorded. So we are in the midst of the proof that something is different. And I'm of a sort of a double-minded phase. One is